భద్రం కర్ణే విష్ణుయామదేవాః భద్రం పశ్యేమాక్షభిర్యజత్రాః స్థిరైరంగైస్తుష్టువాగుంసస్తనూభిః వ్యషేమ దేవహితం యదాయుః స్వస్తిన ఇంద్రో వృద్ధశ్రవాః స్వస్తిన పూషా విశ్వవేదాః స్వస్తినస్తార్క్ష్యో అరిష్టనేమిః స్వస్తినో బృహస్పతిర్దధాతు. ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతిః. శ్రీ గురుభ్యో నమః. హరిః ఓం. మాండుక్య కారిక చాప్టర్ 3 అద్వైత ప్రకరణం శ్లోక 21. న భవత్యమృతం మర్త్యం న మర్త్యమమృతం తథా ప్రకృతేరన్యథా భావః న కథంచిద్ భవిష్యతి. సో ఇన్ దిస్ థర్డ్ చాప్టర్ ఆఫ్ మాండుక్య కారిక, గౌడపాదాచార్య ఈస్ ఎక్స్ప్లెయినింగ్ ద తురీయం విచ్ ఇస్ రివీల్డ్ ఇన్ ది 7th మంత్ర ఆఫ్ ది ఉపనిషత్. నాంత ప్రజ్ఞం న బహిష్ప్రజ్ఞం నో భయత ప్రజ్ఞం న ప్రజ్ఞానగణం న ప్రజ్ఞం నా ప్రజ్ఞం అదృష్టం అవ్యవహార్యం అగ్రాహ్యం అలక్షణం అచింత్యం అవ్యపదేశ్యం ఏకాత్మ ప్రత్యయసారం ప్రపంచోపశమం శాంతం శివం అద్వైతం చతుర్థం మన్యంతే స ఆత్మ స విజ్ఞేయ. సో ఫార్ ద తురీయం సెవరల్ డిస్క్రిప్షన్స్ దే ఆర్ గివన్ ఇన్ దిస్ లిస్ట్. ద ప్రొఫౌండ్ వర్డ్ బీయింగ్ అద్వైతం, ప్రపంచోపశమం శాంతం శివం అద్వైతం. అండ్ ద వర్డ్ దట్ ఈస్ ఎక్స్ప్లెయిన్ అండ్ ఎస్టాబ్లిష్డ్ ఇన్ దిస్ ఎంటైర్ చాప్టర్ ఆఫ్ 48 శ్లోకాస్, ద థర్డ్ చాప్టర్ ఆఫ్ ది కారిక. సో గౌడపాదాచార్య సేస్ దట్ దర్ ఆర్ 2 టైప్స్ ఆఫ్ అద్వైతం దట్ వీ షుడ్ లెర్న్ టు డిఫరెన్షియేట్. వన్ ఈస్ ది సూడో ద సీమింగ్ అద్వైతం విచ్ ఇస్ రియలీ నాట్ ది అద్వైతం. ఇట్ ఈస్ ఎ స్టేట్ ఆఫ్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ ఇన్ విచ్ ఆల్ డ్యువాలిటీస్ ఆర్ టెంపరర్లీ రిసాల్వ్డ్. ఫర్ ఎగ్జాంపుల్ ఇన్ డీప్ స్లీప్ స్టేట్ ఐ ఆమ్ ఇన్ అద్వైత అనుభవ బికాస్ ఐ డూ నాట్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ ద వరల్డ్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ ద బాడీ మైండ్ అండ్ ఆల్ ఆఫ్ దమ్. ఐ డూ నాట్ ఈవెన్ క్లెయిమ్ దట్ ఐఎమ్ స్లీపింగ్. ఇట్ ఈస్ నాట్ రియల్ అద్వైతం బికాస్ ఇన్ స్లీప్ డ్యువాలిటీస్ ఆర్ నాట్ గాన్ బట్ ఆర్ ఇన్ పొటెన్షియల్ డార్మెంట్ లేట్ అండ్ అన్మానిఫెస్ట్ కండిషన్. సో ఇట్ ఈస్ అ సీమింగ్లీ అద్వైతం ఓన్లీ. దట్ ఈస్ వై ఐ క్యాన్ రిమైన్ ఇన్ దట్ స్టేట్ ఫార్ సమ్ టైమ్ అండ్ వెన్ ఐ వేక్ అప్ ఐఎమ్ ఇన్ ద్వైతం విచ్ వాస్ దేర్ ఇన్ స్లీప్ ఆల్సో. సో ఇన్ యోగి సమాధి, సో యోగిక్ సమాధి యోగీస్ దే ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ సీమింగ్ అద్వైతం. ఇన్ డెత్ డెసల్యూషన్ సమాధి అండ్ డీప్ స్లీప్ దర్ ఈస్ ఓన్లీ టెంపరీ సీమింగ్ అద్వైతం సబ్జెక్ట్ టు అరైవల్ అండ్ డిపార్చర్. దర్ ఫోర్ ఇట్ ఈస్ ఇంపార్టెంట్ టు అండర్స్టాండ్ రియల్ అద్వైతం ఫార్ విచ్ ది ఇంటలెక్ట్ హ్యాస్ టు అసిమ్యులేట్ ఎసెన్షియలీ 4 పాయింట్స్. వీ మెన్షన్ దిస్ ఎర్లియర్, ఐఎమ్ జస్ట్ రీకాపింగ్. వాట్ ఆర్ ద 4 పాయింట్స్? Number 1, the origination of the world has to be negated. Number 2, the factuality of the existence of the world has to be negated. Number 3, the appearance and the experience of the world have to be expected. And number 4, the appearance and the experience are caused by maya or moola avidya. Is another term for maya. So Gaudapadacharya is discussing these 4 principles in these shlokas. So to establish this, he reveals a fundamental principle in shlokas 20, 21, 22, especially in 21st shloka that we just read. So now if you look at the shloka, Amritam na bhavati martyam. The immortal does not become mortal. Na martyam amritam tatha. Similarly, the mortal does not become immortal also. Prakritehe anyatabhavaha na kathamchit bhavishyati. Transformation of the intrinsic nature, prakritehe, intrinsic nature, that does not take place anyhow. So we have to understand this shloka a little better. So this is a very important and a profound verse. It has so many corollaries. The essential nature of a thing will never be lost. it will never go away from that thing. Why? Whatever nature does not go away, that is called essential nature. So the essential nature of fire is heat. Wherever there is fire, there will be heat. There can be hot fire or no fire, but there can never be a cold fire. And in case of hot water, the heat is an incidental nature property, and that is borrowed from fire. So everything has both incidental nature and intrinsic nature. We have seen all these things earlier. So what is the nature of Atma, whether it is called Paramatma or Jivatma? The Upanishads teach that the intrinsic nature of Atma is immortality. The intrinsic nature of Anatma is mortality. Body is mortal. Mortal cannot become immortal, and vice versa. Moksha is defined as immortality. Now, I want to attain moksha. I ask the question, how can I become immortal? Gaudapada Acharya asks whether I want the body to become immortal or I want Atma to become immortal. Either way, I'll be in trouble. The body can never become immortal because mortality is body's essential nature. It is the intrinsic property of the body. Atma need not become immortal. So body cannot become immortal. Atma need not become immortal. Then what are we really looking for, and why are we studying the scriptures at all, if this is the fact? We are not working to become immortal because neither Anatma nor Atma can become immortal. Even if they become, they will again become mortal only because it's change. So what is our aim then? It is not to become immortal, but to understand that mortality belongs to the body and it should be accepted without any complaint. Let me understand that I am not the body, but I am the Turiya Atma. Once I claim that I am that Atma, I can also claim that I am immortal. Therefore, becoming immortal is not our goal, but claiming immortality, owning up immortality is our goal. So, while claiming immortality, we should accept mortality of the body. In Bhagavad Gita, we read this shloka earlier also many times. Matras parshastu kaunteyam shitoshta sukadukadaha agama payinaha anityaha tam sthitikshasva bharata. O Arjuna, sense organs and sense objects which cause cold, heat, pleasure, pain, they are subject to arrival and departure. They are impermanent, but learn to endure them. That's advice he gives Arjuna. Anatma will be appearing and disappearing. Some anatmas will be comfortable. Some will not be so comfortable. So one should learn to accept growing old and also respect elders. Old age is respected actually in our culture. What is moksha? Claiming the immortality of myself, the Atma, and gracefully accepting the mortality of the Anatma. That is moksha. Anatma's mortality is essential, and even Bhagavan cannot make Anatma immortal. Krishna's body also is incarnated body, which was not immortal. A very important message is pointed out in this shloka. These are all cardinal principles uniquely discussed in the Karika. Without an understanding of these, Karika will be rather difficult. Shloka 22. Swabhavena amrito yasya bhavo gacchati marthyatam kritakena amritasthasya katam stasyati nischalaham. Yasya for the person who wants to dispute, the disputant, according to whom bhavaha is all these clear objects, which is swabhavena amritaha, immortal by nature, gacchati marthyatam, takes birth in reality. Tasya, for him, katam, how can that entity, amrittaha, be immortal for him? Kritakena, in as much as it is a product, it is produced, it is an effect. And stasyati nischalaha, continue to be immortal or changing. So how can it? So if the intrinsically immortal reality, if that undergoes mortality for a person, how can that immortality remain the same for him, since it is a product? So this shloka is an important shloka for Nididhyasana. It poses a hypothetical argument involving an assumption. What is that? Essential nature cannot undergo change. Mortal jivas cannot become immortal. Finite cannot become infinite. If finite becomes infinite at a particular time, then it can become finite again at a later time. Gaudapada Acharya says, the law is that mortal cannot become immortal. Here he says that for an argument, let us assume that mortal becomes immortal. Then the immortal can also become mortal. What value is there in such immortality? There is no corridor connecting mortality and immortality. If Brahman is changeless, it is always changeless and it cannot become a cause. Because cause means it has to undergo change. Suppose we assume that Jiva who is immortal now becomes mortal at the time of Srishti, and the mortal Jiva again becomes immortal due to spiritual sadhana, whatever we want to do, let us say. The immortality that is accomplished in time will also be lost. So the artificially generated immortality cannot remain permanent. Therefore, the aim is not to become immortal, but to claim immortality as my very nature. In Asatoma Sadgamaya, Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amritam Gayamaya, in that mantra, going from mortality to immortality is only going from ignorance to knowledge. When I go from ignorance, that is tamas, to knowledge, jyotihi, I do not get immortality, but I drop the notion that I am mortal. That alone is required. Shloka 23. Bhutato vapi srijyamane samashrutihi nischitam yukti yuktancha yathad bhavati netarate. Sama Shrutihi. Shrutihi, the Vedas, speaking of creation, they are equally in evidence. Samaha. Srijyamane means with respect to the thing being created. Srijyamane. Bhutaha va abhutaha. Whether it is the bhutaha, bhutas or bhutas, in reality or through maya, as done by a magician, therefore, nischitam cha, that which is determined by Vedas as non-dual, immortal, unborn, all those things, yukti yuktam, supported by reasoning, tat bhavati, that alone becomes the meaning, na itarate, never anything else. This is just word by word meaning. I will explain. So Vedic statement is the same whether duality is created really or apparently. So that which is ascertained by analysis, mimamsa, and is supported by reason, is the proper meaning, not anything else. So here an objection may be raised, which must be answered, and the answer should be assimilated also, because it is not straightforward. Gaudapada Acharya says that the origination of the world should not be accepted. The world has not originated from Brahman. These are all big bombshells. Thus, Gaudapada Acharya accept the Vedas as a source of knowledge, because we start doubting even that. There is a dispute in the academic circles as to whether Gaudapada Acharya accepts the Vedas or is he a Buddhist. Gaudapada Acharya accepts the Vedas because he quotes several Shruti Pramana Vakyam, and this Karika itself is a commentary on an Upanishad, Mandukya Upanishad. Upanishads clearly discuss the origination of the world from Brahman, but Gaudapada Acharya says otherwise. Then is Gaudapada Acharya contradicting Veda Pramanam, is the objection. And the Acharya answers, not by saying that Veda is wrong, but by saying that Veda should be read in its entirety. Taking selective statements will always create problems. If Veda is read in its entirety, it will be found that the Veda does not talk about the actual creation of the world, but only a seeming origination of the world. Even if it talks about origination of the world, it cannot talk about actual origination of the world from the changeless Brahman because it goes against logic. If Veda says changeless Brahman produces world, it is an illogical statement. An illogical statement should not be accepted even if Veda says it. Instead, that should be properly interpreted because Vedas are accepted as pramanam. So instead of saying Vedas are wrong, we should learn to interpret it properly. The statement should be interpreted in such a way that it is not logically contradictory. Then the intellect can accept the statement. If it is logically contradicting, our intellect cannot accept that statement. In several places, Vedas say that Swarga is finite. Whatever is created is temporary. But in some places, Vedas say that celestials in Swarga are immortal. So it seems contradictory and illogical. So the interpretation is immortal means a very long life. It is not really immortal. Immortal in quotes, very long life. For example, compared to human beings, the Devas have very long life. Satyaloka, we already gone through this earlier. So the time span is very long. So it is like saying, for example, you know, we normally say that he got a permanent job. That means what? That job is relatively permanent. Gaudapada Acharya says that Brahman creating a world is illogical. And so even if Veda says that, it should be interpreted properly. So the interpretation is that Brahman seemingly created the world just like the waker seemingly creates the dream world. Therefore, Gaudapada Acharya says that the Upanishadic statements of creation are the same, whether the creation is actual or whether it is seeming creation. There is no doubt that there is a statement of origination, but the Shruti does not clarify whether creation is actual or seeming. The Upanishad leaves it to us to interpret. We talk about sunrise, but we do not say whether it is actual or seeming in our normal reference to the sunrise, even though it is only a seeming sunrise. Which one is the final message of the Vedas? Actual or seeming creation? If we ask, we should take only seeming creation since the other is contradictory to logic. We should come to this conclusion by thoroughly analyzing the Upanishad by the use of the Mimamsa and Tarka sciences. Mimamsa is analysis to know the intention of the author, Bhavet Shruti. Tarka is logical analysis. After such analysis, what is logically possible alone should be accepted. Shloka 24.
Neha neti cham nayate indro maya bhirityapi ajayamano bahuda mayaya jayate tu saha.
So that Atma is indeed born apparently, as revealed by the following Vedic statements. It says, in this means Atma, there is no plurality at all. The Atma is seen as many due to Maya. So remaining unborn, it is apparently born as many. These are all statements. They are all just in quotes. So in these following shlokas, Gaudapada Acharya, he gives several Shruti statements in which the Veda makes it clear that the creation is only a seeming creation and not actual creation. One of them, that we will take up here, for example, is the Purusha Sukta Mantra. We are very familiar with this, many of us. There is a powerful statement in Purusha Sukta, Ajayamano Bahudha Vijayate. So Bhagavan becomes many things without becoming. Ajayamano Bahudha Vijayate. Even without becoming, he becomes many. So Bhagavan creates this world without creating or becoming. How is this possible? This can only mean that the creation is not factual. Similarly, there are so many other statements. When studied in isolation, will only create confusion. So shlokas 24, 25, etc. are all clues for an apparent creation, not a real creation, for an apparent creation. So Gaudapada Acharya takes mantras from other Upanishads to support his conclusion. So first he takes a mantra from the Katopanishad. Katopanishad we have already gone through earlier, so we can refresh it. So that is in the second chapter, in the first section. So manasai vedamaptavyam nehana nasti kinchana mrityo samrityam gacchati yaihana neva pashyati. So that is the shloka. And it says, a pluralistic universe is not there at all. It does not say it was not there, nor will it not be there. It says, even now the pluralistic universe is not there. If a world has really originated from Brahman, the Upanishad should have said that a real universe is there originating from Brahman. It does not say that. That is, the origination is as though origination, as though in inverted commas. If creation is real, Veda will not have negated it. It negates pluralistic universe, and so creation must be apparent. So instead of quoting the entire mantra, Gaudapada Acharya is quoting only two words in this mantra, Neha Nana. So this is clue number one for the apparent creation. So Kathopanishad, that he takes this reference, takes reference to that mantra, and he borrows only these two words, Neha Nana. And the second clue is from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. I already mentioned to you about this Madhu Brahmanam, I guess, in one of the earlier classes. And let me see whether I tried to refer to that mantra, whether I don't know whether I got it here. Let me see if I can. Tadena drishihim pashyanna vochatem rupagum rupam prati rupo babuvam tadasya rupam prati chakshanaya indro maya bihi puru rupayate yukta hyasya haraya shatada shetyayam vai harayoyam vai dasha cha sahasrani bahuni chananta bahuni cha anantani cha tatetat brahma purvam anaparam anantaram abahyam ayamatma brahma sarvanubhuritya nushasanam iti pancham brahmanam. So this is the Madhu Brahmanam which I mentioned earlier. So this quotation he gives from this Upanishad, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And so let it be understood, the great Rishi says, that's what the mantra says, that the master magician Mayavi, who can be called the great Mayavi, the supreme being, who is designed here as Indra, in this shloka, in this mantra, is designed as Indra, the Lord of all beings. He, not the Devendra, that supreme being is called Hirindra. So the Lord of all beings appears in such manifold forms that it is impossible for the physical eyes to connect the forms with the circumstances in which they are really placed. So that's the substance of this mantra. So Brahman multiplies into many through its Maya Shakti, or produces the universe through its Maya Shakti. Maya is generally used in the meaning of magic, normally in scriptures. So whatever magically happens does not really happen. Actually, we have also seen this mantra in the Dakshinamurti Stotram, the second shloka. Bijasyantarivankuro jagadidam prangnirvikalpam punaha Maya kalpita desha kala kalana vaichitriya chitrikritam Maya viva vijrimbayatyapi maha yogi vayasvechaya tasmai shri guru murtaye namayidam shri dakshina murtaye. So tasmai shri guru murtaye namaha, to him who maya viva, like a magician or even like a great yogi, he displays by his own will this universe. So this is said in Dakshinamurti Stotram. So this is the second clue. So the third clue is taken from Purusha Sukta. These are all for interpreting. Ajaya mano bahuda vijayate. We have to understand Dakshinamurti Stotram. This ashtakam is written by Adi Shankaracharya, who came later than Gaudapadacharya. Gaudapadacharya cannot use this. So this we are trying to use it for understanding. The third clue is from Purusha Sukta. Ajaya mano bahuda vijayate. So this means that Bhagavan produces the world without actually producing. So without multiplying into plurality, Bhagavan multiplies. This is possible only by seeming multiplication through Maya Shakti, like the dream by Nidra Shakti. So by using the word Mayaya, Gaudapathacharya reminds us of a verse in the Bhagavad Gita also, which conveys a similar idea. This also we have seen earlier.
Ajopi sannavyayatmam bhutanam ishvaropi sannam prakritim swamadishthaya sambhavam yatma mayaya.
Fourth chapter. So even though being one who is unborn, one whose knowledge does not wane, and also being the Lord of all living beings, still wielding my own prakriti, I as though come into being by my own mayaya, maya. So by own maya I come into being. So Krishna says, even though I am unborn, I am born. This is not logically possible. The only way of explaining is that even though I am not born, I am seemingly born through maya sakti. So this is the third clue. Shloka 25.
Sambhute rabavadacham sambhava pradishidhyate konvenam janayedithi karanam pradishidhyate.
So sambhavaha pradishidhyate. Sambhava creation is negated. That is the created things, they are all negated. Sambhutehe apavadat, because of the denial, apavada, of the Hiranyagarbha worship, sambhutehe. We'll see that in detail a little bit after we go through this the literal meaning. Kaha nu yenam janayet. So by the text, who should again bring him forth? Enam janayet. So, jiva or what? So, karanam pradishidhyate. Any cause of creation, it is ruled out. So, origination is negated by the negation of Hiranyagarbha. The cause is negated by the statement, who indeed will create this jiva? Yes, Hiranyagarbha is negated. So, another clue is taken from the Isavasya Upanishad here. So the Upanishad talks about Hiranyagarbha Upasana. We also did Isavasya long ago. It's a short Upanishad. So there the Upanishad talks about Hiranyagarbha Upasana. So Sambhuti is a word used in Isavasya, in that Upanishad, to refer to Hiranyagarbha. So what is Hiranyagarbha? Hiranyagarbha is the first one born out of Ishvara, called Brahma in the Puranas. We can call it Brahmaji, the Chaturmukha Brahma or whatever. So in the Puranas. So in the Puranas, Vishnu is depicted as Ishvara. And from him, from his navel, comes this lotus. And then Brahmaji. So Brahma is called the firstborn. So the Upanishad talks about Hiranyagarbha. And after introducing Hiranyagarbha Upasana, it says that it will not lead a person to moksha. This Upasana has its limitations. That is, Hiranyagarbha Upasana has its limitation. Karma and Upasana will not give moksha. That way, Hiranyagarbha Upasana criticism is done. Because Upasana of Hiranyagarbha will not give moksha. So from this it is clear that Hiranyagarbha is not the ultimate. Thus, the birth of Hiranyagarbha has to be apparent, and thus the origination of the world, which supposedly happens from Hiranyagarbha, is only an apparent one. So this is the next clue, fourth clue. Then the fifth clue is from again Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, called Sakalya Brahmanam. That is the third chapter, third dhyaya. So the ninth section. So this, there are 28 mantras in this Upanishad, in this section, in the group of seven verses actually. So the seventh mantra is quoted here. I'm not going to read the mantra now. The Upanishad is questioning, who can create this world? So by raising the question, the Upanishad says that the cause for origination of the world cannot be talked about. So Brahman can never become the cause of the universe. That is the declaration of the Upanishad. Cause of the creation, origination of the world cannot be talked about. Other than Brahman, there is nothing else that can be the cause of the universe. Then what is this world? It is called Maya, an appearance without any logical explanation. The more we probe into the creation, the more mysterious it becomes. And our final answer will be what? I do not know. That is called Maya or Mula Avidya. Shloka 26.
Sayesha neti neti ti व्याख्यातं निन्नुते यतः सर्वं अग्राह्य भावेन हेतुनाज्यं प्रकाशते.
अग्रहाय भावेन हेतुना बिकॉज ऑफ दि अनग्रास्पबिलिटी अग्राह्यम ऑफ दि आत्मा बिकॉज वी ऑलरेडी सीन दिस थिंग दि वेद नेगेट्स एवरीथिंग दैट वाज डिस्क्राइब्ड बिफोर by the statement, it is not this, neti, neti. So, therefore, the unborn Atma alone, that is prakashayate, it shines. So, the sixth clue is from, again, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. It is not referred to in this particular shloka, but from Kaivalya Upanishad, that is another Upanishad. Actually, we have quoted this Upanishad also earlier many times. There we have this, the particular statement, na bhumihi, apaha, and all that, the five elements that we experience so clearly, we experience all of them clearly, they are only appearances and they do not exist at all like mirage water. Very difficult things all these to comprehend. Even quantum physics and cosmology find the origination of the universe mysterious. Even the God particle is experienced but not there actually. In the mantra, the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad divides the entire universe into concrete, the murta and abstract amurta forms, both at the micro level and at macro level. The physical body is murta universe, and the subtle body, the mind, the thoughts, they are all the amurta universe. Matter is murta universe and energy is amurta, that is form and formless, let us say. So the entire universe is classified into murta and amurta. What is the truth? While revealing the truth, the Upanishad negates both the murta and amurta forms through the statements neti, neti. Any anatma universe is not reality. So one neti is to negate the murta universe and the other neti, 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 is for the to negate the amurta universe. And any anatma grasped by us is not the truth, any anatma. If everything is negated, what is the truth? The Upanishad does not reveal the truth. It just negates and leaves the truth for our imagination. After negating everything, whatever is left behind must be the truth. What is left behind is the one that is doing the negation, similar to the witness in the deep sleep state, that is witnessing the absence of everything. Therefore, the one who is doing the negation, the very subject, the Turiya Atma, that alone is the reality. So the Murta and Amurta universe is Mithya. So what? Let them be Mithya. So if the universe is Mithya, its origination is Mithya also. After the negation of everything, the non-negatable Atma is evident as I am. Aham, Aham, I am. Because I, the Atma, am not an object of negation. The world is negated as Mithya, and so the origination of the world is not factual, but it is seeming only. Shloka 27.
Sato hi mayaya janma yujyate na tu tattvatah tattvato jayate yasya jatam tasya hi jayate.
So for an ever-existent person, one, birth is possible only apparently and not really. Because it's ever-existent. So where is the birth? It's only apparent. Whatever is born for that person who holds that it is really born. There is really no birth. But if he holds on to that really, that seeming bond, that's what he thinks. So with the previous shloka, the Mimamsa analysis is over, which shows that the origin of the origination of the world is apparent and not factual. Now, Gaudapadacharya gave six clues from the Upanishads that establish the seeming creation of the universe. So, hereafter, the Acharya logically shows that the creation is not factual. So, earlier, the seeming creation, he said, now it is not factual. So, when different systems of Vedic tradition talk about the actual creation of the world from Brahman, Paramatma or God, whatever we want to say, they cite the Vedic description of creation. If the scriptures say that the world came from God, Gaudapada Acharya asked the question, what is the description of God that is given in the scriptures? If one is a seeker, the question of who is God and what is God's nature, they all should be asked. A real mumukshu will ask these questions. In all the scriptures, God or Brahman is described as unborn and immortal, deathless. Now, Gaudapada Acharya asks, if God is unborn, deathless and eternal, then is he subject to change or not? Should the changeless, you know, birth, death and all those things, there are two types of change only. Birth and death, there are changes only. This is the number one point. So, if anything has to be a cause of something, that has to undergo change. The very idea of cause denotes change. Cause means change. Being a cause and changelessness are mutually exclusive. It is like light and darkness. So the changeless God or Brahman cannot be the cause of creation. For example, rope cannot be the cause of the snake. If rope is really the cause of the snake, that snake creation must only be a seeming one. Similarly, Brahman cannot be the cause for the creation, but if it is said that Brahman is the cause of the creation, then it must be a seeming creation only. Shloka 28. Asato mayaya janma tatvato naiva yujyate bandhya prutro na tatvena mayaya vapi jayate. So for a non-existent entity, birth is not at all possible, either apparently or really. For example, the son of a barren woman is not born, either apparently or really. So if Brahman cannot be the cause of the universe, why can't it be said that something else is the cause? Brahman need not be, something else can be. That cannot be said because the Upanishads say that before creation, Brahman alone was there. There was nothing else other than Brahman. Assuming nothing is something. For example, if you think assuming nothing is something, why cannot be said that the world has come out of nothing? Out of nothing, only nothing can come. The world cannot originate from Brahman, something other than Brahman or nothing. The conclusion is that the world has not originated at all. There can never be a satisfactory explanation for the origination theory because any explanation will suffer from logical issues. Gaudapada Acharya's contention is that the origination theory is temporarily accepted until the intellect is prepared. And once that happens, the origination theory should be discarded. So from the non-existent cause, nothing can originate either actually or apparently. From Brahman, the world can seemingly originate, but from nothing, even that is not possible. The son of a woman who is incapable of giving the birth can never be born, either seemingly or actually, as given in the shloka. Therefore, Sat is not a cause, and Asat is not a cause. No other cause is there, either it could be Sat or Asat. The world has not originated. But what is seen is an appearance caused by Maya. That alone is seen. Then the question is it possible? Gaudapada Acharya says it is possible for something to appear without actual origination. There are many examples he gives to support this. So the dream world is the most powerful example and it is given in the next shloka. We will read. Shloka 29. Yata swapne dvaya bhasam spandate mayaya manaha tata jagradvaya bhasam spandate mayaya manaha spandate the mayaya manaha, the mind spins a seeming duality, dvayabhasam, a seeming duality in the waking state. through its Maya Shakti, just as the mind spins a seeming duality in dream through Maya. So in the dream state, that's what this shloka says, in the dream state, an apparent dual world is reported by the mind. When the mind perceives the dream objects, the mind takes them to be real, with actual origination. If you can create a dream world seemingly, why can Brahman not create a waking world seemingly? In the same way, in the waking state also, the dualistic world is reported by the mind to be real. Turiyam, through our minds, gives reality to the waking world. The mind, Turiyam into Turiyatma. The mind, through its obsession, born out of avidya, ignorance, it reports that the waking world is Satyam. The waking state has a conditional reality and it has existence, this all that, you know, we already utilization and all that thing, it has got all those factors. It is transformation, it has, you know, existence, it has utilitarian values, all of them are ETO. So the dream world also has ETO in the dream state. So ETO characteristic of Mithya and not of Satya. Of Mithya. Satyam can never be experienced. So experience, transformation, transaction and utility. So Satyam can never be experienced because I am Satyam and I am never an object of experience. Shloka 30. Advayam chadvaya bhasam manaswapnena samshayaha. Advayam chadvaya bhasam tatha jagranna samshayaha. The Advaita mind alone is the seeming duality in the dream. There is no doubt. Similarly, the Advaita mind alone is the seeming duality in the waking state also, about which there is no doubt. Jagran na samshayaha. So the seeming duality we experience in dream is only the Advaita mind. The Advaita mind alone is appearing as the dualistic world in dream. Similarly, in the waking state also, the seeming world does not exist separate from the Advaitam observer. This world is available for everyone. But the dream world is available for only one mind, the dreaming mind. How can they be treated equal? Again, the mistake is what? Is thinking of dream from the standpoint of the waking state. The dream should be looked at from the stand. We have mentioned this earlier. The dream should be looked at from the standpoint of the dreaming state. But the worlds are available for many minds in the respective worlds. So there is no doubt about this at all. That is the substance of this shloka. Shloka 31. Mano drishyamidam dvaitam yat kinchit sacha characharam manasohyamani bhave dvaitam naivopalabhyate. Mani bhavaha. So this duality consisting of things, beings, all of them is a projection of the mind. But because on the occasion or the cessation of the mind, duality is not at all perceived. Dvaitam naivopalabhyate. So with the 30th shloka, the previous shloka, Gaudapada Acharya concludes the main discussion that the world origination is not factual. But it is apparent only from the scriptures and logic. He has finished the topics of the non-origination of the jiva and the world called Ajativadaha. This is called Ajativada, the teaching of non-origination. This is called Ajativada. So hereafter, Gaudapada Acharya gets into sadhana and palam for this teaching. So in shloka 29, he said that mind alone reports a real duality in the dream world and in the waking world. So, real duality is presented to us by what? By the mind. Now, this real duality reported by the mind is the cause of samsara. That is why we face problems in the dream and in the waking states. In deep sleep, there is no duality, no attachment, no aversion and no samsara. In deep sleep, sushupti. So, Gaudapada Acharya says that the ultimate culprit for samsara is our own mind. Do not blame anything else or anyone else. The problem is we ourselves. and the solution also is we ourselves. Even if I run to God and get the problem solved, it will be only a temporary solution. Unless we learn to tackle our minds, we can never solve the problem of samsara. The entire Vedanta is how to tackle the mind. When the mind is active, duality and samsara are there. When the mind is resolved, as in Sushupti, duality and samsara are gone. This is called the Anvaya Vitireka logic. We have already gone through all these things in several places. So the entire dualistic universe, consisting of the moving and the non-moving, is reported by the mind alone. As long as the mind continues, the problem will continue. Therefore, learn to handle the mind. We already spoke long ago about Mano Nashaha. What is this Mano Nashaha? Really tackling the mind. We cannot destroy the mind. This is reported here by the technical world. Amani Bhavaha. That is converting the problematic mind into a non-problematic mind. That is tackling the mind. So the entire dual world of moving and non-moving objects, charam acharam, that is reported by the mind in both the waking state and the dream state. When the mind becomes the non-mind, amani bhavaha, that is when the mind is tackled, there is no reporting of duality. So amani means it is not mano nasha, it is when it is tackled. This is what needs to be done, how to tackle the mind. How will we do that? Shloka 32. Atma satyanubodhena na sankalpayate yada amanastam tadayati grahya bhaveta dagraham. By the knowledge of the Atma, which is the reality, when the mind does not perceive duality, then it ceases to be the mind. In the absence of objects to be perceived, it becomes a non-perceiver. So here Gaudapada Acharya is presenting a very subtle Vedantic message. So because of the mind, we are experiencing the world of duality. We already said all that. So the mind functions as the mind because it experiences the world of duality. When we analyze whether the mind is because of the world or the world is because of the mind, we discover a peculiar truth that the mind and the world are interdependent. Both of them do not have an existence of their own and both depend on each other. And so both are mithya. Mind and the world are mithya. Both of them borrow existence from something else other than the mind and the world. How to know this? The mind consists of thoughts. For every thought, there is a corresponding object in the external world. At the individual level, the mind is nothing but a thought and the world is nothing but an object. So take a part thought, for example, and there is a part object. There is a series of thoughts and corresponding objects. All possible thoughts put together is the mind. And all possible objects put together is the world. The mind and world can be understood as thought and objects. Look at the way, the perspective, how it is being analyzed. Now, the Gaudapada Acharya, so mind and the world are taken as thought and objects. Now, Gaudapada Acharya says that when you reduce mind and world to thought and object, and analyze whether the thought is dependent on the object or the object is dependent on the thought, we find that each of them cannot exist independent of the other. Without an object, there is no thought. And without a thought, there is no proof for the existence of an object. If there is an object corresponding to which there is no thought anywhere, the existence of that object cannot be talked about. The existence of one cannot be proved without the existence of the other. Since both are mutually dependent, they cannot be independent. So both are mithya, borrowing existence from something other than either of them. That something is the Turiya Atma. The Atma alone that lends existence simultaneously to both the thought and the object. Therefore, from Atma, thought and object borrow existence and rise together in the waking state and in dream. The dream thought and dream object exist simultaneously in Atma. So in deep sleep, both the thoughts and the objects, they resolve simultaneously. So we cannot have one existing with the other resolving. We cannot have resolution of one only. When people meditate, they try to resolve all the objects. When all the objects are removed, all the thoughts also resolve. When all the thoughts are resolved, there is no mind and the meditator dozes off. Mind cannot survive if some object or the other, either external or internal, is not visualized. The message is what? Thought and object, they rise and resolve simultaneously. The mind and the world rise simultaneously and they resolve simultaneously. Both of them are mithya. Both of them, they borrow existence from something else, the Turiyatma. So it is important to understand the adhishtanam of both of them. Trying to tackle the world alone will not work. And tackling the mind alone also will not work. It will end up in some other problem. Swami Dayananda, he says, in psychology, there is no solution. In Vedanta, there is no problem. So trying to understand the root of both, the world and mind, that alone will help. So that root is Atma, the Satyam. So when Atma is known as Satyam, the world and the mind are understood as Mithya. Both will continue to be experienced, like a movie on a screen, for example. The screen is Atma. They will continue to be experienced. You do not try to handle them independently. You do not negate them also. You only deflate the mind and the world of that reality. Allow them to be and continue to experience them. But they cannot cause any samsara because Mithya cannot touch the Satyam. I am the Satyavastu. I am the Turiyatma. Mithya world cannot touch me. The mind and the world are tackled directly. But only by understanding the truth of the world and the mind and the world are two and the adhishtanam is one. The dream object and the dream thought are two, but the adhishtanam is one. Who? The waker. The waker alone is getting divided into dream thoughts and dream objects. One Atma alone is appearing, both as the experiencer and the experienced. Understand the Atma, then both the mind and the world become like a movie similar to the dream thoughts and objects. By gaining the knowledge of the truth of the mind and the world will help with the help of a guru, for example, and Shastra, that truth is known to be Atma, the Turiyam. Never look for that Atma because the seeker is the sought itself. The seeker itself is a sought. When the mind does not report duality anymore because of the knowledge, thereafter the world will not be world, but it will be Atma with the world disguise. And the mind will not be mind, but it is again Atma with the mind disguise. The mind becomes non-mind, or the mind is falsified. These are all seeming. But both the mind and world are falsified simultaneously as mithya. In the absence of object, there is absence of thought. In my understanding, there is no such thing called world other than Atma. A part can be negated by two methods. We have already seen this also earlier. When you want to negate a part, you can negate it by two methods. What is the one is breaking the part, it's destroyed. The other method is to look at the part carefully and know that there is no part other than clay. That is another way of looking at the same thing. Holding the part and proclaiming that there is no part is wisdom. There is nothing but clay alone. The name part is used for transaction only. Similarly, a Vedantin looking at the world, he loudly proclaims that there is no world. It is only Atma with different names and different forms. Just because there are many names, There are not many things. There is no mind or world, but there is only Atma. Maybe I'll do one more shloka. Shloka 33.
Akalpakamajam jnanam jneyabhinnam prachakshate brahmajneyamajam nityam ajenajam vibhudhyate.
So the unborn, the eternal Atma, has Brahman as the object of knowledge, as the game. They declare that the Atma is not different from Brahman, the object of knowledge. So the unborn consciousness without division, it is jneya abhinnam, without any division. One knows the unborn Atma by the unborn Atma only. Ajenajam vibhudyate. So, it's another profound and technical concept that is presented in the shloka. Because of the complexity in the construction of the shlokas, only its essence we will see now. We are not going to do much details. So, we have said that the mind and the world are independent, interdependent. Mind and world are mithya. Satyam is Atma, which is adhishtanam of both, all that we just said. So, if Atma is not an object of the mind, how can one know that Atma? With the mind alone, we are gathering all types of knowledge. If both the mind and the world are negated as mithya, how can one know the Atma? Further, Gaudapada Acharya says that Atma is never recognized as an object with the help of the mind. If Atma is an object, it will come under object-thought duality. The mind can never know the Atma by objectification, as it does in the case of the other objects in the world. All these things we have seen in Tattva Bodha. Atma Bodha, I don't know whether I did for you. Okay. The mind need not objectify the Atma because the mind itself is illumined by I, the Atma only. The mind itself is known by and objectified by I, the Atma. What is required is that once mind and world are negated as mithya, what is satyam is whatever is left out. What is left out is what? I, the Atma, the subject. So who is the witness of the arrival of the mind and the world in Jagrat Avastha, and also the witness of the departure of the resolution of the mind and world in deep sleep? Therefore, I am the satyam. It has to be claimed and not objectified by mind. I am always present before the arrival of the mind and the waking state and during the departure of the mind in the deep sleep state. Now Gaudapada Acharya says that Atma is not known by the mind, Atma reveals itself by itself because Atma is self-evident. That I am need not be known with the help of the mind because even before I start operating the mind, I know that I am. Mental operation is required to prove other things and not required to prove myself. Therefore, I say I am Satyam and the mind and the world are Mithya. How do you tackle the mind and the world? By knowing they are Mithya. And how do you tackle the Atma? The Atma need not be tackled because it does not create any problem. Mind creates problem, world creates problems, we need to tackle them. Whereas Atma doesn't create any problem because it doesn't have to be tackled also. So maybe I will stop here and then we will continue in the next webinar. Yo Veda Dausvara Prokto Vedante Cha Pratishtitaha Tasya Prakriti Leenasya Parasa Maheshwaraha. Sri Krishna Arpanastu Narayana.